Gary. After statement and then a question. One of the big challenges in your area is spreading this across the public sector environment. Just yesterday, we had a big decision here in Canberra that there would be significant investment in public sector infrastructure, but it will all be within public sector financing. Some of your innovative things have been across the service sector broadly, in schools and health and prisons. What about your predictions for the trends that are going on, not only in Britain but here in Australia, politically and whatever, across the public sector utility environment? What are you seeing the big movements in public sector decisions about investment in water, transport and so on? Do you see any trends going on there about willingness to take true risk sharing in the private sector?
All of this was privatised some years ago in the UK. UK moved a long way on that. I mean, the water industry is private. The rail industry is substantially private. Water's a good example. I can remember when I was in government having a lunch in Parliament House with Ian Causley, who was Minister for Water Resources. And we had a couple of officials from Lyonnais des Eaux, as it then was. And we were talking about what they did. And they were explaining to us that they 4% of their turnover was invested in R&D. Membrane technology was the sort of hot product at the time. Now, can I tell you, sitting there as we were, looking through the eyes of Sydney Water, as it then was, that was a radical idea, the idea that a public enterprise would be spending that amount of its turnover in research and development into radical new technologies was a bold idea. And I don't imagine that a great deal has changed on that, simply because I mean, as Brian indicated, I am sort of the godfather of corporatisation in this country. We did it first. Nick and I had sort of developed that idea. Then the New Zealand Labor government did it, so we just thought, well, let's just borrow theirs. It'll make it a little bit difficult for the opposition to disagree with us. And yet, basically, a lot of the efficiency gains that we got out of corporatisation weren't ploughed back to the consumer. An awful lot of them have just simply been taken by Treasury or treasuries. They've just simply treated the dividends as a tax, and that money has been hived off. I don't see how the public sector ownership and financing structures can address those questions, can be providing that kind of innovative research and development. Now, I suppose you can take the view that, well, we'll just piggyback off other people's research. We'll just take advantage of whatever other people are doing elsewhere. And that's a view. I think it sounds to me like, I mean, if we were doing that right across the board, I don't know that we could particularly imagine that this country would be any kind of a world leader in very much of anything at all. Let me give you an example, an historical example. For about 500 years, the Dutch dominated hydrology. All those dikes and polders and windmills and so on that we have fixed in our minds from the Dutch was part of a massive program to reclaim wetlands through very sophisticated hydrographical techniques, hydrology, pumping, and so on. A substantial proportion of that in the Netherlands was done by the private sector. It was financed by the private sector, it was built by the designed by the private sector, built by the private sector, and the O&M was done by the farmers who lived on that reclaimed land. So the boy with his finger in the dike is doing some early O&M. They then proceeded to export that across the rest of Europe. Now, you can sort of say, okay, the Dutch had a wetlands problem, so that's why they did it. Well, they did have a wetlands problem, but the Germans had an even bigger one. Vast areas of Germany were a bog, but it wasn't the Germans who developed this. When they needed to do it, they brought in the Dutch. And the same was true of the British. And the same was true of the French. And they didn't just come in and deliver some civil engineering skills. They brought in the management techniques that were necessary to sustain, to support, and undertake the operations and management of it. And they dominated. This tiny little country dominated that for 500 years. And I was telling this story to somebody the other day, and they said, today, and I forget where it was, they were talking about some dredging that was going on in a harbour somewhere, and it's a Dutch firm that's turning up. If we continue to think in that mindset that says this is a public function and I'm going to define it in bureaucratic terms, it will be financed through traditional means, we will commission some civil engineering skills in very constrained terms from the private sector, and then we'll go out and commission some people to build it in fairly constrained terms, and then we'll run it ourselves. We are denying ourselves the opportunity to innovate and to become a significant international player in leveraging our considerable skills in this regard into the international environment and to get all the benefits that go with that here in Australia. Now, you know, is this fantasy? Well, Hong Kong was ahead of us with PPP, with toll roads, with PPP toll roads. Theirs all happened to be tunnels, but they're just simply a variation. But they didn't take advantage of it, and it isn't. I mean, while they sort of exported some construction skills, they didn't lead on that. We did. We've given Macquarie Bank, I mean, it was PPP toll roads that gave Macquarie Bank its leverage into the international marketplace. Babcock and Brown are doing the same. And Transurban is now in a different area built around this new service model that we invented here in Victoria off one toll road. They're now playing in the North American market. All off the back of, what, 8 toll roads, maybe? We're capable of that kind of innovation. We're capable of that kind of leadership. And 20 years ago, when we sort of first started to head down this path, we were well ahead of the British. The British didn't start doing this until 10 years later, in the sort of about 1997 is when they started doing it seriously. We gave up the leadership. We've given that away, and the British now have a substantial edge over us. There are several places, like toll roads, where we're still ahead of them. So my answer to you is that is an old producerist, sort of Fordist mentality, productionist mentality that says, you know, we, the public sector, will sit here and pump this out in a very constrained model, and the private sector will be over there and brought into play in very constrained terms. And I just think we're doing ourselves as a country a huge disservice by adopting that approach. I think we're also doing our civil servants a huge disservice. I mean, one of the things that this does is free up some remarkable talent inside the public sector to begin to interact with private sector capability to produce whole new possibilities. So, how do we get that message across? I guess we've just got to find a dozen different ways of trying to shift the mindset so that we can see that there's a different model there, and that, you know, Britain is. This first mover advantage in this. Who dominated the prison market, certainly for its first 10 years? The Americans, because they did it first. Who dominated the water market? The French and the British, because the French never nationalised their water, and the British moved first. Who dominated electricity in the first round of privatisations? The Americans, because they never nationalised. So there is first mover advantage in this. We're not doing ourselves any favours as a nation by sitting back and remaining fixed in sort of... you know, mid-20th century models.
Thanks, Gary. The next question is with Glenn Withers, who's the newly appointed CEO of Universities of Australia.
I'm impressed when I go to Europe and read the Financial Times, how often Babcock and Brown and Macquarie Bank and Hastings, as it used to be, and so on, are set up as models of great Australian ingenuity. But I wonder about a couple of aspects of what it is we're selling for that success. And I'd ask you how you handle two critiques of what you put to us with great zeal. One, if I could give it an Australian name, is the John Priggen critique, and the second is the Tony Harris critique. John Priggen one says, look, to get the benefits you pointed to, such as service synergies, we've at least got to have a 10% advantage because we can raise public debt at 10%, we've got to raise private cost of capital at 20%, so unless we're getting synergies of more than 10%, we're not ahead. Secondly, will we get those synergies? Answer, many times we won't. This is the Harris thing. That's because private sector smarties work to out-negotiate public sector dunderheads, and the minute any dunderhead becomes smart, they get hired across to the private sector. So we end up having asymmetric contracts that always mean the taxpayers being diddled, the citizens being diddled, and Macquarie Bank is rich. What's wrong with those critiques of PPPs as opposed to privatisation?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Well, the first answer that I give to the contracting versus privatisation is that you can't privatise a prison. So we're now in the UK, and I think in Rhodes, moving to a place where we're talking about infrastructure services which can't be privatised and just regulated. Light-handed regulation. Or we are certainly talking about a kind of regulation that is so like a contract that we're actually facing the same set of challenges. And indeed, there is a crossover point known in the literature as the regulatory contract, which is used in regulating large manufacturing companies and resource companies where the regulation really functions as a contract. So there's a crossover here. And the regulatory contract, a very intrusive form of regulation, which is necessary in very sensitive projects, environmentally sensitive projects, looks very much like the sort of contracts that we operate with prisons where they're very hands-on and it is very much a partnership. So I think part of the answer is that. I mean, we really can't privatise roads. You possibly can create franchises for the rail network. The Brits discovered they had gone too far on that. They'd got too fragmented a model, and they've had to bring that back in, and they've set up a franchise system that is more tightly controlled from the centre that seems to be working better. And those franchises then start to look very much like the sort of contracts we're talking about, some slight differences. On the Quiggin 10%, I mean, it is, the gap isn't 10%. The once you get a deep enough market, the margins aren't as great as 10%. But secondly, the savings are potentially much, much larger. We've got a report, the Institute's putting a report out at the end of November, looking at about 180 international studies on the financial benefits of competition and contracting, not necessarily PPPs. Defence, 20 to 30%, and in some cases much more. Prisons, 5 to 15% in the US studies, much more than that in the UK. And as I said, compared with the public sector comparator, that was done for the first PPP prison, which was actually a pretty good quality one because the public sector had just finished a very extensive program of building their own prisons. So they had a pretty good idea of what the costs were. From that to about the fifth, I think, PPP prison, Forest Bank, there is a 800-bed prison, same size prison, 38% price reduction. In refuse collection, which is a perhaps unimportant area, but it's been well studied, the studies cluster around 20%. In health, the evidence is much more mixed. Although my guy's hopefully going to be giving me his chapter on that tonight, and I'll be doing that before I go to sleep. So the evidence indicates that if we do this well, the savings are massive. How do we get companies, you know, how do we sort of control? I mean, the point you make about needing to control companies is crucial. I mean, companies are there to make money. And there's no doubt at all that we need a sufficient number of officials to manage the contracts and to manage even the consultants that they bring in from the private sector to advise them on dealing with the Macquaries. Part of the answer to that in this country, where you've got fragmented jurisdictions across the states, is that I think there ought to be a central expertise, like Projects Victoria, whatever, Major Projects Victoria, I think it's called now, and the UK partnerships, UK, British Columbia's got the same model, Partnerships BC. There needs to be a central body of expertise, and those people need to be paid well and motivated well. But beyond that, it isn't just the contract. Part of the reason why we behave ourselves is that, as a company, is that we've been in the industry for 40 years and we'd like to be in it for another 40 years. And the market is deep enough that we have repeat plays. And as you'd know from economic theory or from game theory, repeat plays means you get around the prisoner's dilemma problem. You get cooperative behaviour if there is the prospect that I'm going to have to come back and replay this game later on. So it isn't just about designing good contracts, it's about designing good markets. So dabbling in this carries costs. It's actually better to commit yourself seriously, bring on board the expertise to do it, and then make sure that the industry knows that there will be consequences for companies that don't play ball. Let me tell you that, having observed my people, the people I work with, that gets their attention. They worry about that. So I think there are comfortable answers to all of those. It's right that those points are raised. It's right that there are issues. There are design issues with these contracts, and we need to develop expertise to get them right.
We've got time for one more question. Department of Health in Queensland, I think.
Darren Maxwell, I work for the government. Just a couple of points on that, those ones you just raised. As Gary said, there's I think about a 50 basis point difference between the public sector and the private sector can raise debt out of the loan. And in Queensland, we've just had a paper recently which shows that on a $370 million project, there's probably about a $12 million saving if the public sector actually raises the debt. So when you think of that, that's only about 0.3%. So what you've got to remember about that, if anyone sort of is talking about it, that the fact of the matter is the government raises that as a non-risk adjusted debt. So it's all very well for any sort of treasury corporations to raise their debt non-risk adjusted, then it falls back on the four agencies that have then got to suffer it. I guess just on your second point, I'm a career public servant and I enjoy that, and I believe that I can negotiate better than any other private sector around the place, and I don't think they can pay me enough. My friend Roger Blake here, no relation, from Deloitte, would justify that I won't go to the private sector on any amount of money. So there are public servants around it that are looking to do it for the enjoyment and for the fact that, people come up to you with meat counter and Coles and shake your hand and thank you for the job, of course. Gary, I actually did have a couple of questions. We spoke earlier. I work for the Department of Infrastructure and also supply help to assist in the Sunshine Coast Hospital that we're doing up there. And one of the issues that I have is convincing government that, or convincing the people in Queensland Health that there are services that we can put out to the private sector that will provide value for money to government. Now, our hospital is going to cost us, it's around 700 beds, it's going to cost us, I don't know, something around $1 billion. We spend $1 billion every year and a half actually servicing that hospital. So the question that I get from the core health people and the various people in government is, all right, we're spending so much money on core health services, how much money can we actually derive if we put this out of the private sector on things like putting out the catering, putting out to various bed linen and that sort of thing? What can I actually tell them to show that there will be value for money?
Well, we'll have a study out at the end of November, which is we're pulling together 180 studies from five sectors, one of which is health. It is frustrating that the quality that there is far too little good quality evidence on this. And in the UK, where we've done 800 PPPs, it is all public sector comparator versus contract price, and it is all dated because Treasury couldn't see the point in continuing to do public sector comparators. so that, that there's sort of nothing that's newer than 5 or 7 years, which is, when you're still trying to win the debate, frustrating. But there are a significant number of studies there. In the prisons chapter, which I did, there I've got 43 studies. Not all of them can be sort of translated across, because some of them are sort of studying particular aspects. But I've basically wound up with 16 studies that I think are solid enough that we can look at them and say, okay, that's telling us something, that, you know, we're comparing apples and apples, and quality has basically been held constant as best we can determine it, and so on. The evidence is there. The evidence is consistently on overwhelmingly on the positive side. Not consistently. There are obviously places where contracting didn't work. But it is solidly that way. There is no evidence to suggest that there is a bias in those studies in favour of the private sector, and some evidence to suggest the opposite, because the public sector rarely costs the delivery of its services properly, so that it's leaving out overheads, it's leaving out pension costs, and so on. So there is no reason to suspect that there is a systematic bias to the advantage of the private sector in those studies. So we're sort of pulling those together. I expect it to be controversial. I expect the John Quiggins of the world to take deep umbrage. In a sense, I would have thought the proposition that competition reduces prices really ought to be unexceptional. What we are trying to do in that study, and there's only about a third of the studies help us on this, is to try to see where the savings come from. If they just come from cutting terms and conditions, then we've transferred wealth. We haven't, from workers to the government. There is certainly some of that going on, although much less than you would think, and some of the studies tell us something about where the productivity savings come from, beginning to sort of bottom that out. It is deeply disappointing to me that that the quality of the data on PPPs out of the UK, given how much we've done, is not better than it is. To be frank, part of the reason is that the Treasury officials and the people who do this just know that they're getting on-time, on-budget delivery, which they weren't before. They can see the differences, and their view has been, you know, okay, it might be useful in convincing the academics, but, you know, we know this works. We're just interested in getting on with it. That for those of us who are still out there trying to convince new governments and new public officials that this is worth doing, that's a bit of a downer. So we're still unfortunate. But, I mean, I think the other side of this, I mean, what happens with the PPP prisons in the UK is that the first prison delivers a 17%. The first PPP prison delivers 17%. And that just sort of improves over time to the point, as I say, where they get to a prison that's had its ups and downs but hasn't been a bad prison. It's been you know, an okay prison, middle of the road, sometimes up, sometimes down. Where it gets to 38%, but they didn't go to 38% on one. It took time for companies to learn from each other and to begin to play in this space and find places where they could innovate and make a difference. So, you know, there's an argument here for not dabbling, for not just doing one, but for trying to build some depth into the market.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I know there are a couple more questions. Unfortunately, our program time is up, and I'm sure if you had some questions, Gary would be only too happy to answer those after we close. But at this stage, I'd like to ask Brian Fisher from CRA International to thank Gary on your behalf.
Thanks, Brian. And ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure for me to have just a couple of moments to thank Gary for a very insightful speech. Without wanting to repeat your points, it's probably worth saying that for me, that the two most important things you've said is, first of all, that infrastructure is not about infrastructure, the buildings and the ports and the railroads themselves. It's about the services they deliver. And I think often in Australia we forget about those services. We think that if there's a problem at Newcastle Port, then banging in another port or another coal loader solves it without thinking too much about the way in which those services come together, the way in which the railroad interacts with the port. In other words, how those services are delivered. Often, for example, we build roads that don't connect to ports. We build railroads that don't connect to ports. We do AusLink, and we don't think about the way these things actually link. So that service point is very, very important indeed. And I guess it reminded me a little bit about an old episode of Yes Minister, where there was a hospital, and it was a good hospital because there were no patients. So that's a pertinent point, I think. And the other point I think that you made that for me was very important was this one, that if you release some public servants so that they have got extra time to think about the things that they do best and allow the private sector to do the things it does best and allow those two groups to interact, then you get better innovation. And I think all the public servants here will agree with that readily. I'm not too sure that... I don't know who said it. Somebody said dunderheaded public servants will always be beaten by the private sector. Even though I'm now in the private sector, I must continue to defend my public sector private colleagues from many, many years. And I think that point about the interaction is very, very important.